Hey, landlords, are you ready to level up your rental game and simplify your life? Well, get ready to meet your new best friend, KeyCheck. KeyCheck is your all-in-one solution for stress-free property management with tenant-paid screenings, rent payment processing, online lease creation with eSign, and a suite of incredible landlord tools. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. No more chasing down checks or sifting through piles of applications. KeyCheck helps you organize and manage all things landlording in a simple and efficient way. So if you're tired of the rental chaos and crave seamless, efficient management, head over to KeyCheck.com and sign up today. Make landlord life a breeze with KeyCheck, the game changer for modern property owners.
Welcome to Landlord Diaries, where we talk about midterm rentals and the opportunities behind them. We'll share landlord stories, talk about maximizing investment potential, and discuss how to live the very best landlord life. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Furnished Finder, the place for everything midterm rentals. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoy our content.
Hey, hey, guys, we are back. It's Kelly Bailey, your host of the Landlord Diaries in the Austin, Texas, Temple, Belton, all the fun surrounding areas. Loving those midterms.
And hey, everyone, I am Katie, and today we are joined by Amelia and Grace, who are full-time real estate investors, both located in different parts of Iowa. These two ladies found each other on Instagram, of all places, partnered up, and have gone through their real estate investing journeys. They've been working together and growing together, and now they're at a stage where they're also working to reach out and create a community of real estate investors, and they teach courses and have retreats, and they really are a wealth of knowledge and brightness, and it was so fun to talk to them. I feel like we have so much we didn't even touch on that hopefully we'll be have them back for a part two as well. So please enjoy, and don't forget that this episode and all episodes are brought to you by Furnished Finder. We are the go-to marketplace for all of your furnished monthly rentals, and there are no booking fees on the platform, which is amazing. So enjoy.
And we're back with another great episode of the Landlord Diaries. Today, we get to hear from two Midwest ladies that specialize in educating other investors through their real estate journey. Join Amelia McGee and Grace Gudenkoff as we focus today's episode on the 10 steps to getting started in real estate. If you would like to connect with these ladies, you can follow them on Instagram by searching Wire with two I's community, wire.community, wire with two I's dot community. They have so many great handouts on their link tree, such as 3 steps to launch your MTR and double cash flow. Hi, ladies. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Great. Thanks for being here. So question one is, how did you two connect and start this incredible community?
Yeah, so we actually connected through Instagram. So we met online. I had seen Amelia's profile and didn't know anybody else in the great state of Iowa that was a young woman investing. So we joke that I slid into her DMs, and we connected and just started doing an online meetup together, and it's turned into what we now call Wire.
I love it. And I have started following these ladies. I've been to their website. I've listened to their podcast. I've viewed their link tree. They are incredible. So if you are looking for just a good educational group to just really hone in on your real estate skills and figure out, if you don't know what your why is yet, then they'll help you figure it out. And that leads to our next question, which is step one in the process of 10 steps to getting started in real estate, which is their second podcast episode. And that step one is, what's your why? So I want each of you to give us, what is your why for your real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. So my why for real estate investing is definitely to have time freedom and location freedom, so I'm not tied down. When I first started investing, it definitely was my goal to replace my full-time income so that I could go full-time in real estate investing and be my own boss. Always knew I wanted to be my own boss, but wasn't sure what that was going to be in. And then once real estate presented itself, it was kind of just all in for me at that point, after I bought my first rental property.
Nice.
Yeah, mine is very similar to Amelia's. And at this point, now that I've been doing real estate for a couple of years, my why is more focused on continuing to be my own boss. So not doing anything that gets me with somebody else telling me what to do. Keeping that time freedom and doing lots of travel and working on things that bring me joy and that I have passion for.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit more about you guys' current portfolios. And also tell us what is Wire, which Kelly mentioned that you guys have established.
Sure. So my portfolio is around 36 doors at this point. It consists of a mixture of long-term, midterm, and one short-term. Midterm is definitely my favorite investing strategy, though. And there's also a mix of small multifamily, a handful of single families, and then an 11-unit apartment, which makes up a large chunk of those 36 doors. Yeah, and they're all in either Des Moines, Iowa, or a little town about an hour south of Des Moines.
Mm-hmm. My portfolio is all in my backyard, as I like to say, within 10, 15 minutes driving. I have 19 doors, 12 of which are midterm rentals, and those are all fourplexes or smaller.
Awesome.
And then as far as the Wire community, that really was a passion project that Grace started and then brought me on as a guest speaker. And then we decided to do it together. And so for a year, we were just putting on monthly meetups and having a guest speaker to talk about some sort of investment topic that we wanted to learn about. So we're like, let's bring somebody on so we can also learn. And we really thought that there wasn't necessarily a space for us in the investment community. There are other female investor groups, but we think ours is definitely unique, very fun, authentic, very vulnerable. So yeah, that's why we started it, that we thought that there wasn't a place that we fit in necessarily, and we wanted to create our own.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much. So just so everyone's aware, we are getting back to steps 2 through 10 of how to get started in real estate. But before that, let's talk midterms. So how are your midterms doing? So why don't you start first, Grace, and give us a rundown of like why you like the midterm strategy. And on your link tree, it says, get started in midterm to double your cash flow. So tell me all about your midterms.
Absolutely. I love midterms because the tenants tend to be clean and quiet and respectful. I also love the income that I get with not doubling my headache. So we like to say you double your income. You can double your income without doubling the headache. And I don't really ever want to be a short-term rental host. I'm not really into that. So I love midterms because it's right in the middle of long-term and short-term.
Good point. And how about you, Amelia?
I reiterate everything Grace said. Basically, I think most midterm rental investors are doing it for very similar reasons. Good quality tenants, higher cash flow, less turnover than a short-term rental. And yeah, the place gets cleaned every 3 months, so it's generally in really nice shape. And that's pretty much my reason for it. And we each started out with one in our markets and saw how that performed and then continue to expand from there.
Oh, we have a fifth guest today. Hello, Fido.
Yeah, my dog people. Is a very good and terrible watchdog. But Kelly, I know you want to get back to steps 2 through 10, which I am also dying to hear. But I want to take a really quick detour because you guys are young and fresh and super ambitious and have quite a few doors to your names. So I want to ask the question that I know is probably on a lot of our listeners' minds right now, which is, how did you manage to scale so quickly? And if you're comfortable sharing, how were you able to finance that? And we won't linger on this too long, but I know that as soon as you mentioned those big number of doors, a lot of people are going, okay, wait, how is the first question we hear a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely share. So I originally started investing by doing a flip. And I partnered with my parents on that flip. I spent probably 2 years trying to convince them to invest in real estate. And finally, they said yes on a house that pretty much there was no way that we could go under on it. And so we each walked away with about $20,000 in profit. And from there, I took my $20,000 and put a down payment on a triplex. And that triplex ended up being a BRRRR, although I didn't realize at the time that it was going to be a BRRRR. So that's buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. So I was able to pull out my capital from that property and use it again to buy a quadplex on my own from the same sellers of the triplex. It was a landlord looking to get out of the business, already had that connection. So in October 2020, purchased the triplex, and then in the very end of December 2020, purchased a quadplex. So within 3 months, I had 7 doors, and between the two, they were cash flowing around like conservatively $1,500 a month. I was only making a salary of around $50,000 at the time. So I really didn't have the golden handcuffs of being a huge high income earner to where I needed a lot of money to replace my full-time income. So that helped me be able to quit very quickly. From there, to wrap it up, I ran out of my own money, obviously, very quickly. And so on my next deals, I've had partners, either silent equity, family, or people that I met through Instagram.
We've heard so many stories of like how valuable partners are. And I think that's so cool. How about you, Grace?
Yeah, so we do a lot of the BRRRR strategy. And I think two things to point out that are super important is that my partner and I did DIY, so we were able to do more with less money. And we're both in Iowa, where you can get a house for $50,000. So that's not necessarily feasible in other markets. So I always just want to point that out. But we did a bunch of BRRRRs. We started with a lot of big rehabs. Of course, same with Amelia. When I started running out of money, had a silent equity partner here, private money lenders there. But continued to chase value add opportunities so that we were able to recycle, whether it was our capital or somebody else's capital that we were using. And I was only about a year or two out of college. So to put it simply, I still lived like a broke college kid. I didn't need 6 figures to live off of a year. So I was able to comfortably quit a year after. Obviously there's still risk and all of that good stuff, but like Amelia, I didn't need a ton of money. I didn't quit because I was making millions. I quit because I was like, this is a viable income path. I like it. I like being challenged, and I'm going to take this risk.
But I think that's great. And that answers, you know, the question that, like I said, I think a lot of listeners will instinctively have, because I know anytime that I'm talking to family or friends or anyone, and I'm like, yeah, like we're going to get another property. We're going to do this. I'm like, how in the heck are you doing that? And I'm like, there is a way. I don't know if you guys have heard of Marie Forleo, but she wrote a book called Everything is Figure Outable. And it's like, if you want it bad enough, you can figure it out, right? So I love your answer, and thank you for sharing.
Yeah. I love that line.
I never read that book. Yeah, I've never read it, but that's basically the motto that Grace and I live by. So,
right. Yeah. It's a great book, but honestly, I got about halfway through and I was like, okay, I get it. The title, like,
you get it. It's figure out.
That sums it up, right? Yeah, pretty much.
Well, before we leave the midterm rental talk, two more questions. First, we had a previous call to just kind of establish what's best to talk about for the most value for you guys. And so I asked Amelia what she would like to share to our Furnish Finder midterm rental audience. And she said, how to run a successful MTR in rural markets. So you got the floor, Amelia.
For sure. So running a MTR in a rural market is very similar in a bigger city, except there's like no competition, right? But I think the big takeaway is that a lot of people don't even realize that there is a market for midterm rentals in rural towns. Rural is a really fun word to say, by the way. If you're listening, say it 10 times.
It is.
I'm just going to switch it to small town so I can quit being tongue-tied. But basically, my hometown is about 5,000 people, and it's where I originally started investing. And there is obviously, as we know, a shortage of nurses and CNAs and everything else in the country, specifically in small towns and rural markets. So the nursing home and hospital in my small town have a really hard time finding local residents that have their BSN or RN or are qualified CNAs. So they have to bring in travelers. And so I didn't even realize there was a market for it, but people in my community know that I'm a landlord. So they actually reached out to me and asked if I had any furnished units available. And I was already thinking about it at the time, but that was kind of a light bulb moment where I was like, oh my gosh, why don't I put a midterm rental here? And it was super successful. Just got a call the other day from the recruiter at that hospital that needs a place for two more nurses. So I'm in the process of fixing up a triplex, and now I'm even more like pressed to get that done so I can get it furnished and rent it out. But I also have a short-term rental in a lake town that's only about 8,000 people, but there's a town about 15 minutes away that has a large regional hospital. There's maybe 50,000 people in that town. And, you know, my parents were naysayers that we wouldn't get anyone to rent a midterm rental in our short-term rental for the winter months, which are off season. And it was really fun to prove them wrong. We put it on Furnished Finder, and literally 2 hours later, we had a nurse booked for October through January.
That's great.
So that was great.
Mentioned that you connected directly with the hospitals. How did you go about accomplishing that?
They came to me. Like I said, it's a small town, so people know that I invest there. And so somehow they got my cell phone, which I actually don't like people giving out my cell phone in my small hometown, because then everybody ends up having it and I get calls all the time. But if it's a recruiter at a hospital or it's the nurse manager at the hospital, I'm fine with them having it. So yeah, they seeked me out.
That's a good boundary to kind of keep that life balance, since this is essentially your full-time job. I like that. So Grace, your question, you said that you wanted to share about the property manager process for your 8-unit apartment that you've converted all to midterm rentals.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Furnished Finder, the ultimate platform for hassle-free midterm rentals. Whether you're a seasoned landlord or just getting started, Furnished Finder is the place for you. With Furnished Finder, you can say goodbye to booking fees and hello to direct bookings for 30-day plus days. It's a win-win for everyone involved. So if you're ready to experience the joys of midterm renting and take a load off your landlord's shoulders, head over to furnishedfinder.com today. We make it easy to get started. We're grateful to Furnished Finder for sponsoring this episode, and we're sure you'll love what they have in store for you.
Yeah, so I guess I should clarify. I call that an 8-unit, but I said earlier we have fourplexes and below. It's 2 fourplexes that are right next to each other. So if you were wondering. But yeah, I think that midterm rentals also offer a really nice solution to get to the point where you need a property manager, whether it's part-time or full-time, quicker, because there is more management, but there's also more income. So if I had 19 all long-terms, I definitely would not need a manager, but I would want one because I don't love managing. But it's nice with the midterm rentals, because I have 12, there is a bigger management piece, and I'm able to have the income and like just enough of that time stress to be like, okay, I'm going to go hire it out. What I've done is, as most people know, it's really hard to find an Airbnb or midterm rental manager. So I actually hired in-house as I hired a W-2 employee on an hourly wage to come learn from me directly and be my in-house property manager. So that means I had to put all my standard operating procedures together, video record myself doing certain tasks, you know, lots of screenshots of things that I do online and teach all of that. But the benefit is I get to train them directly, so I don't have to work with a third party property management service. So I get that quality control, and I'm paying about a third of the price than if I was just going to pay 10 or 15% or maybe even 20, since there would be treated maybe like short-term rentals of my revenue to a third party.
I love that. And is all your training process, did you record that and put it online anywhere? Is it on your Instagram?
No, it's not. It has a lot of like tenant names and financials and stuff in it, so it'd probably be harder to share, but that is something that I, like my weekly tasks list and all of that good stuff. I would love to share more of that because I've talked about it with certain people who are like, oh, I want that. Awesome. So maybe I'll publish it.
Yeah. And on their link tree for the wire with two eyes dot community, they have a free property manager checklist. So that's one that you've already put together, which is awesome.
Yes, we do have that, which is really nice. If you're like, how do I even get started? Lays it all out for you.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to bring us back to how do I get started in real estate? And I'm going to kind of expand this to if we have a property manager or landlord who maybe has one or two properties, there's current renting, you know, their garage that they've converted, you know, how to, I think all of these also kind of apply to like how to keep going in real estate. Mm-hmm. So number two that you guys talk about is what's your financial situation? So tell me what you guys mean about that and what someone really needs to get a handle on to move forward.
Yeah. Amelia and I are both big believers that you should really figure out how to manage your own paychecks before you go and try to take on a $50,000 rehab. If you can't manage a few thousand dollars, you're not going to be able to manage a giant rehab that always goes over budget. So Amelia and I were both personally debt-free besides my mortgage, my primary residence, when we started to invest, so we didn't have to worry about making those credit card payments or auto payments or whatever it was. And we knew at the end of the day, our foundational financial education was really solid and we could build off of that and take that to a real estate businesses.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's so important. It's like you have to know how much money you have even to get started investing. A lot of people that I talk to that are new, they don't have any idea how much they would even qualify for a loan or how much they have saved for a down payment. So, I mean, before you do anything else or really move forward or dig deep, you need to analyze your financial situation and determine how much a house you can even afford before you move forward with buying. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So number three, choosing the right market. How do you advise someone to go about doing that?
I would say, we always say, go with your competitive advantage. There's millionaires in every single real estate market. You could probably make lots of markets work, but make it easy. Go where you know the market or where you know your money's going to do well for you. Maybe you know somebody who's a contractor. You already know an investor. You know this place has good landlord laws. Whatever the competitive advantage is, go with that and stick with it.
I would say there's three steps to determining a market. One is, can you invest locally? That should be your first option if you can. Two, if you can't invest locally, like Grace said, where do you have a competitive advantage? Do you have an uncle in Atlanta that's a contractor? Do you have a cousin somewhere that knows the market? Go there. If you don't have either one of those, if you can't invest in your own backyard and you don't know anybody anywhere, go to Google. Where are other people investing? What are good markets to invest in? And go there. Those are your three options.
I just want to elaborate and kind of dovetail with you guys a little bit, because I think all of those things are very, very important. There's also tons of resources online from all sorts of different sites and sources, but specific to which type of property that you're looking for, right? Like if you're looking for midterms, maybe look at where there's a lot of new construction that construction workers might be needed temporarily, or architects or travel nurses. Where are there clusters of hospitals? I think it's also like you guys and I have chatted before, and I'm from Iowa and we're currently purchasing a property to turn into a midterm rental right in Grace's backyard. And it's because Denver here, our money doesn't go nearly as far. The properties are not in the type of condition that we're really equipped to handle right now. And I do have a lot of family back in Iowa, and they have a lot of connections with contractors and construction if we should need it. So it's like, it's real. Like, those things are so applicable.
Yeah. Number four, choose a strategy.
I would say it all comes back to your why, which sounds cheesy, but it's not. Because
not cheesy
we know
at all.
Yeah, we know that the more work required, probably the more money you're going to make. So if you're like, I want to quit my job right now and make so much money, maybe you should look into flipping or wholesaling. If you're like, I have a great job, I don't want to quit it, but I want to build another nest egg, for retirement, maybe you'll just do long-term turnkey rentals. Or maybe you're right in the middle of where Amelia and I both were, where we did want passive income, but we did want to quit our jobs. So that's where we did some rehabs and some midterm rentals and some long-term rentals. So really, it's like, what works for your lifestyle and your time, your energy, your passion, your money, and backing into it.
I don't have anything to add because that was an awesome explanation.
Okay, next step, crystal clear deal criteria. And I feel this one with a passion, because as I'm going through looking for new properties and new opportunities, I'm like, I could make that one work. And it's like, no. I set my box, it fits it or it doesn't. So tell me kind of what you guys have experienced with that as well.
We call this the buy box. It's basically exactly what you're looking for in a deal. And it makes decision making surrounding putting offers in on properties and looking for those properties very easy, because you know exactly what you're looking for. And if you're if you're stuck in analysis paralysis, a buy box is so important, because if you make a promise to yourself that once you find something that meets that deal criteria, you're going to put an offer in, it's like, okay, that's what I'm going to do now. Like, I have my buy box. Once I find something, that's it. I'm making an offer. And a buy box should contain things like, obviously, location, price range, what's your investing strategy, does it need rehab or not need rehab, what cash on cash return and cash flow numbers are you looking for? So all of those should be wrapped up in a really pretty box with a bow on top, and then presented to realtors, wholesalers, post them in your local investor group so people know what you're looking for. I've had great success doing that, and I know Grace has as well.
Yeah, and I would say one piece of advice that really changed this for me is, if you're working with a realtor or a wholesaler, somebody told me, you need to tell them no to a deal and have a reason why. Because if you're just saying no just because, you know, you don't feel it or you're nervous, like, that means you're not clear enough on what it is you're looking for. So when you get super crystal clear, you can in turn make your wholesaler and your realtor and your investor friends super crystal clear about where you're looking for. And then, like Amelia said, when it lands on your doorstep, you've got no choice but to make it work, because you put all the different points together of what you want, and here it is. So you better make that move.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Number six was local investing.
Local versus out of state. So that goes back to choosing your market. I think it all depends on, you know, do you have a competitive advantage where you're at, or do you have a competitive advantage somewhere else? Are you in a really high cost of living market, or is it affordable to invest where you are? So all of that kind of goes into it, but you should know right away whether you're looking locally or out of state. Don't waste your time looking in both if one definitely doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. And landlord-tenant laws are a big one. So like, if you're in a state, maybe like California or Washington, where you know that they are a little bit tougher and you do have a competitive advantage elsewhere where it's cheaper, could be a good opportunity. And one thing we always say is that DIY/local investing is way easier to get started, but it's harder to scale because you're making the business you. Whereas out of state, long distance, can be really hard to get that first project off the ground and completed. But once you do, you've got systems and people in place to take on multiple projects and scale quicker.
And I would add to that, to encourage everyone to think of, if you're thinking of somewhere that's out of town, think about, is it somewhere that you can get to quickly? or cheaply? Is it somewhere that if you need to go to see the property or help furnish it or set it up or rehab it, that you could take a quick flight to get to? Or is it something that you've got to, you know, it's a pain and it's super expensive to get to? Because we have, personally, I have properties in kind of both locations. And I'm telling you, the property that we have that is in Florida, that's really expensive to get to, I don't see it very much, which is fine. But then I need to rely a lot more on, you know, FaceTime and photos when I really wish that I could just get out there. So keep that in mind. Sometimes you can have something that's out of town, but make it so it's not, you don't have to like jump all the hurdles to be able to visit it. Okay. Next question, DIY or hire it out?
Yeah. Same idea. Is do you want to get started now and maybe you don't have a ton of money and you're willing to put in that effort and those hours to build that sweat equity? Or are you a busy W-2 worker with a family and you'd rather just pay and build the systems to hire out the right contractors?
I want somebody to write a book called How to Overcome OCD Through Midterm Rentals. Because that's where I'm at. It's like, you know, there's a book coming out called 30 Day Stay. By the time this podcast airs, we will have already. Okay. So go back and listen to the episode from Ziana or Sarah. And they say, hey, you should be able to do anything from wherever you want to in the world. And my mind cannot wrap around that idea because everything is in my backyard. And I don't see how you can let go of everything. So that's where I'm trying to work it out.
You got to get to Elsa land, man. Let it go.
And don't make me sing right now. I will do it.
Let it go.
Yes.
And
thank
that's
you.
Another thing is it's, if you are like that and you go somewhere, you're like, okay, maybe I'll buy an hour away. Well, if you keep driving there and showing up, like maybe you really do need to buy something that's 5 hours away so you can learn to hire it out.
Yep.
If you don't feel like you can do it when it's in your backyard.
Awesome. I'm going to combine number 8 and 9 together, which is your book recommendations and podcasts are a great tool for those 10 steps to getting started in real estate. So, Amelia, why don't you go first with what's your top couple book recommendations and your top podcast recommendations?
I'm a bad person for this because I will say that I probably read the least amount of books of any investor that I know because I'm a hands-on person.
Nice.
And I never suffered from analysis paralysis. I read a couple. So I did read the book on how to invest in real estate that Bigger Pockets published. Rental property investing, obviously I've read that one. So those were like the two main books and then watched a couple YouTube channels. Obviously we all know Bigger Pockets, or if you don't know Bigger Pockets, you should. They have so much free information, the podcast, their YouTube, their book. So if you're looking for good recommendations, like any of those, I would say. Mm-hmm. Grace, what about you?
I would say a great book is Your Money or Your Life by Vicki Robbins, which isn't real estate specific, but again, talking about your foundation being your personal finances. This book will really help with that. And also it will help you back into your strategy because it really helps you get crystal clear on, like, you know, what it is you want out of life and understanding that your time equals money.
Awesome.
If I had to give a piece of advice to a new investor, it would be to learn enough to be dangerous, but not to get sucked into over learning and over analyzing. I feel like a lot of people think that they need to know everything before they get started, and that's simply not the case. You're going to learn 10 times more buying that first property than you ever are from reading a book.
I would agree with that. I think it's very easy to get stuck into the constant learning phase. And especially because for a lot of us, learning is fun, right? Like I enjoy learning. but to some degree, yeah, you are going to learn a lot more by getting out there. And in real estate, these are real assets, right? So at the end of the day, if something is not going the way you want or you want out of it, you can sell it. Right. So that's how I kind of, I always like to think, okay, what is the absolute worst case scenario? And maybe that's not the best positive thinking, but it does help because then you know, like, okay, this is the worst, right? This is zero. And then we have all of the other things that could happen. And if this is zero and I can still like sell the property, like, you know what I mean? Like it's going to be okay. So I think those are all very, very good points.
Yeah. We always talk about worst case scenario. It's so important because if you can handle it and picture it, you're not going to be scared to go after the best case scenario.
Right.
I like that. So the last one of 10 steps of how to get started in real estate, you got to bring it back home. And their 10th step is join the Wire community. So give them a quick reminder of how they can reach out to you ladies and be part of your community. And guess what? These ladies just got back from a retreat that they hosted with a nice group in Florida, I think. So go ahead and remind them how to connect with you, and then give us a recap of how your retreat went.
Yeah, you can find us at wirewith2eyes.community on Instagram or womeninvestinrealestate.com. But we are a female group of investors. We like to keep things fun while also packing everything full of knowledge and action. But the retreat, I think it's the highlight of Amelia and I's year. We do a couple a year. This was our third one. And it's just a weekend full of women business owners, mostly real estate, who get you. And they get the problems. And we all have the same problems typically, no matter where you're at in your journey. And it's just so much fun. Literally so much fun. What do you think, Amelia?
Yeah, we feel a lot of the feedback that we get from the women who attend is that they don't have friends in real life who are wanting to talk about real estate 24/7 or business, money, goals, etc. 24/7. And when you come to one of these retreats, that's pretty much all it is. It's also super fun because it's women only. So I feel like there's a different level of like silliness and vulnerability than you would get with a mixed group. So they're just a blast. We're going to be announcing our first retreat in 2023 here in a couple of weeks. So we're super excited for that. Yeah. So if you're listening and you're interested, like follow us on Instagram because that's where we're going to be announcing it. But we're very excited.
All right, you guys, we're starting to wrap things up, but I would love to know how Furnish Finder has been a part of your journey and how that has helped you along the way and what role it plays.
Furnish Finder.
Jinx.
I love it.
Jinx.
We're terrible.
You guys know Jinx is still a thing with my kids. It's still a thing.
I'm glad. As it should be.
I know. It has not gone away. I'm excited about that.
Furnish Finder honestly has been one of the biggest resources that I've used for my midterm rentals. It amazes me how many people still ask me where I'm listing my midterm rentals, because I just think everybody knows about Furnish Finder, like it's this greatest platform ever to find travel nurses on. But I love the platform, makes it super easy to connect with the nurses. I listed my very first midterm rental on there and had it booked within under a week. And so that basically had me addicted to midterm rentals right away. And yeah, it boomed from there. I think I have 7 or 8 at this point. So
it's amazing.
I also think there's so many resources that are like on the Furnish Finder website that people don't realize, whether it's the landlord resources or even the tenant resources are really helpful to a landlord. I'll look through those. And just that information that it provides is so helpful when it comes to setting up your midterm rental. I'm very glad that Furnish Finder exists. Otherwise, I honestly don't know how I would be running my midterm rentals.
Love it.
Thank y'all. That's very heartfelt answer. And, you know, we ask that question no matter how someone's going to answer it. So we're so happy to be part of your journey. Do y'all have a date for that retreat yet? I think you said you don't. Not yet, right?
March. We'll say March.
March? Okay, great. Because I think this episode will be released in January. So that'll be perfect. Awesome.
Okay, yeah.
Well, anybody want to add any last thoughts before we wrap up?
No, just thanks so much for having us and thanks for everything that Furnish Finder does.
Yeah. Well, I think
absolutely.
I started building what to talk about for this episode because I loved your advice on the 10 steps to getting started in real estate. But then I also love the 3 steps to start your MTR. So we might have to have another second episode in the somewhat near future so that you ladies can keep encouraging other midterm landlords to just get after it and pursue whatever it is that they want their why to be. So if you'd like to ask these ladies any specific questions, please go to The Landlord Diaries on YouTube. If you're loving our show, Apple Podcasts is a great place to review it. But wherever you listen to your podcast, we should be there. So thanks everyone for listening and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.